From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In 2010, Ben Masters took a semester off of college and went on a pack trip with horses throughout the West. And he says it changed his life. They didn't have a lot of money for the trip, so they adopted some wild Mustangs from the BLM. And Masters says those Mustangs outperformed the domestic horses in every way.
After that ride, I couldn't stop thinking about all those horses still in the holding pens. And I wanted to do something about it. I wanted to prove the worth of these Mustangs.
So he had an idea. Get some friends, adopt some wild horses, and ride them from border to border, Mexico to Canada. The story is told in a documentary film called Unbranded, and we're talking about it today with Ben Masters. What he learned riding 3,000 miles on the back of a wild horse. After the news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. You can do that online at KUER.org. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Ben Masters says everyone likes the idea of a 3,000-mile, 5-month-long backpack trip with horses in some of the country's most beautiful land until they realize what that actually means. Because it's expensive, it's hard work, it's dirty, it's slow, it's hot, it's cold. But not so long ago, Masters found three friends who would be willing to go along with him. The idea was to ride across an almost contiguous stretch of public land from border to border, that is, from Mexico to Canada, through Arizona and Utah, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana. And part of this was just about the adventure. Could they do it? But another part of it was to prove a point about wild horses, because they chose for the trail horses wild Mustangs, Mustangs they had adopted from the U.S. Bureau of Land Management. Masters says he wanted to show people that Mustangs aren't these worthless beasts that, and sometimes that's what you hear from time to time, that they're dangerous and that they're flighty. And thousands of these wild horses are wasting away in holding pens. It's part of a larger public debate over what to do with these horses, whose numbers just keep growing. How do you manage them? Where do they fit on public land in the West? Masters made a film about his journey, and today in the program we're going to be talking about it. It's part of our documentary series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. The film is called Unbranded. We're screening it next Wednesday night. Ben Masters will join us here in just a moment to talk about the film. Joining us now, that was Patrick Hubley of the Utah Film Center. And Patrick, welcome. Thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, hi, Doug. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to give people, before we start talking to Ben, a sense of the film that we're going to be screening on Wednesday night. You brought this to our attention. What was it about this film that caught your eye?
Well, I mean, like at first glance, it was a story about the West. And, you know, thinking about the conversations that have been happening over the years about what to do with wild horses, mm-hmm. and, you know, the situation with the horses here in Utah and across the West. That was what first attracted me to the film before I even had watched it. But then after watching the film itself, I mean, the film is such a visually stunning film, and seeing the landscapes that Ben and his friends traverse during their journey really, really struck me. And so the film is incredibly pretty. The visuals in it are incredibly stunning. But, you know, as much as it is about the horses, the journey itself that, you know, not only they make physically, but as they make as friends and as, you know, just as people was equally as interesting to me.
You know, so, I have to say that part, it was really interesting, the relationships. And I don't want to give too much away. So there's a kind of a spoiler at the end that I will not give away, I promise, during the program today. But there's this interesting dynamic between Ben and one of his friends, Johnny. And it plays out throughout the film, and it's really interesting, the kind of they're getting along at moments, sometimes they're not. But that human dynamic, I did not expect in this film. It was really interesting.
Yeah, nor did I. I mean, but what, you know, in hindsight, I think that the relationships undergo, you know, stresses and transformations that any friendships you know, will go through, but just in a heightened environment. You know, they were really out and, you know, they were on their own. I mean, they were supported to a certain extent, but, you know, there are some situations and moments where you realized how isolated they really were. And that can be trying on anybody. And I think that's, you know, that journey and the trials that they went through, you know, are exemplified in that, I guess, in their relationships.
The film gets at the debate over wild horses on public mm-hmm. lands in the West. It gets at that, but it's not about that.
No.
But I think it's interesting that it does really deal with that issue, but in an indirect way. It's not a direct film about wild horses. It's more than that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the catalyst for the journey, and certainly the horses are, you know, wild horses that have been broken, I guess is what it would be the term. But you know, it really is a story of friendship and a journey and about the journey. And so you're right. It's not an overtly it's not overtly about the horses. They're a part of the story, but the story for me is really about the journey and the friendship.
Who are we expecting on Wednesday? You always wonder who the crowd would be that this would appeal to. And I have to say, it's not just folks who like horses. I mean, I think it's got a kind of broad appeal if people will give it a shot.
Absolutely. This is the thing. I mean, it's a very human story. So anybody interested in, in a documentary that is about people and relationships, I think will be interested in this. I think the film is very strong. And I think anybody who sees it will enjoy it.
And the character of the horses, too. That was the kind of lovely part of the film. I mean, you get a sense that these...
Absolutely.
I mean, you said broken, and I'm thinking, well, you know, they're not really broken. In some cases, they're more tame, but man, they sure have personalities. And not knowing that much about horses, I loved that part of the film.
Yeah, and I don't know much about horses either, and it was just amazing to see the... sort of the human horse relationships. You're right. Each horse that they're riding has its own character and, you know, is unique, but it was also really, I think it was really touching to see the bond between, you know, the riders and their horses and how they felt about them. And I think that's a big part of the story too.
Yeah. I guess it's fair to say it was a surprise. I mean, for me too. I wasn't necessarily expecting to like it like I did, but it's great.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I mean, it really was, like I said, I went into it thinking with a preconceived idea of what it was going to be about. And to me, the film was surprising, eye-opening. And like I said, the footage is really, really wonderful. So it looks great. I'm excited to see it on the big screen, actually.
Yeah.
After seeing it on, you know, on a computer monitor. So I think it'll look really lovely.
Okay, there's our pitch. It's Petra Kubley, Artistic Director of the Utah Film Center. Next Wednesday night, we invite you to be with us for Unbranded. It's going to be where we always are, the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. Ben Masters is going to join us for a Q&A after the film, so I think you'll like that as well. Admission, remember, is free. Seating, though, is limited, so you should always try to get there early if you can. We have details about all of that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Patrick, thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, Doug.
Ben Masters, when we get back from a break, you're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are continuing our documentary film series with the story of four friends who adopt some wild horses and ride them from border to border, Mexico to Canada. The idea was to have an adventure, see if they could train these Mustangs, take them through some of the roughest terrain in the West, Utah included. But they were also trying to learn something about the horses. There's this ongoing dispute about wild horses and their place on public land, whether there are too many of them, where they fit in the scheme of things with livestock. So they talk about that in the film as well. And they also learn something about themselves along the way. The film is called Unbranded. We're screening it, as we've been saying, next Wednesday night. We'll give you details, more details anyway, about that as we go along. Ben Masters is joining us throughout the hour. He masterminded the Unbranded ride and the documentary film that captured it. He also authored a book about the ride. It's also called Unbranded. And he's joining us today from the studios of public radio station KPFT in Houston, Texas. And Ben Masters, glad you made it. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
So let's start, I guess, with the beginning. And I guess we have to start with the trip you took in 2010. You took some time off of school, and you rode a lot of miles in the West. And you talk about in your book how it really changed your life. Let's start there. What was that trip like? What did you learn on that trip?
I'm from Texas, and in Texas we don't really have a lot of access. It's about 96% private land. And after my freshman year at college, I went and worked at a place in Colorado. It was for an outfitter, and I was just amazed by how much access and public land there was in the West. And that hatched the idea to ride through the state of Colorado the next summer with some of my buddies that I had in college. And, you know, that morphed into, well, let's just do the entire Continental Divide Trail. So we did about 2,000 miles or so in 2010. And we had 6 horses and 3 people. And that was the instigation for the Unbranded ride.
You write about how that particular trip in 2010 was really difficult, and as you say you told yourself you would never do another horseback trip again because it was cold and it was really difficult. But you changed your mind, and when did you start thinking about the Unbranded trip, that idea?
Well, it's funny how memories get fonder with time. We finished that ride, and, you know, it was a few weeks later. I was really just bored out of my mind, not really knowing what I wanted to do, and looking back on all the events that happened to us and thought, you know, if we had filmed that, people would want to watch it. And we also used Mustangs on that first ride, and I was really impressed by how well they did on the trip. And, you know, whenever it was finished, I kind of looked into, you know, the wild horse issue and all the controversy surrounding it, and thought, well, if we did it again, you know, and incorporated a wild horse message into it, maybe we could, you know, inspire some adoptions or try to tell their story and make a success story with them.
So when you think about what you're trying to accomplish with the film, part of it was just, this is interesting. Like, people would, I mean, this is hard, and it can be dramatic at times, and it can be a little scary at times. Put aside the wild horses thing for just a moment. I mean, this is pretty dramatic stuff. I have to say, I got a sense from the film that this is more dangerous than I think a lot of people figured too.
Yeah, we had a lot of injuries. It's still a miracle that nobody, that we all lived through it. You know, what we didn't show in the film, because we had so much extra footage that we weren't able to put in, but one of the guys got dysentery and had to go to the hospital and get IVs. We had, this is kind of off track, but the first time we got them shooed, we put shoes on all the horses, and we called this guy who had never, or who had the record for putting on the most shoes in the world, like 60,000 horses or something crazy like that. And he was putting the shoes on our horses for the first time, and he had a heart attack and died.
Wow.
He went into cardiac arrest, excuse me. And then the ranch that we were staying at had an AED, and we were able to zap him back to life. And then, you know, the helicopter came and took him away. But that was like 2 or 3 days before the journey started. So talk about freaking us out before the trip even began. And fortunately, he's still alive and doing well. He didn't have any brain problems or anything. But Phil Baraboo, the director, he got taken off the trail for 2 or 3 weeks. He took a blow right to the femur, bruised his leg severely. It was exciting, that's for sure.
When you were thinking about all of this, you write in your book about how you talk to a bunch of production companies, like, I really want to film this. Let's see what this is. And you talk about how the bigger ones kind of wanted to do sort of a reality TV show. But you say that's not what you wanted. You said you wanted something more raw. How were you thinking about what the film would be in those early days?
I'll go ahead and say it right now that Unbranded is so much better than my wildest expectations whenever the idea first came to mind. I mean, it's really good. Whenever we were first conjuring up this idea, I was thinking, you know, there'd be some pretty scenery and there would be some, you know, some of the Mustang story in it and maybe one or two events, but what those guys captured on film, just, you know, literally one cameraman at a time, was this really compelling tale that's a human story as well, with, you know, individuals in it. And I didn't know that they were going to get that much emotions out of people. Mm. And I was not planning for that. They did a really wonderful job of you know, telling the character story in addition to, you know, the ride and the Mustang story as well. And then Val, you know, we had no idea that Val was going to become an important character. He ended up becoming one of the most relatable people in the film, and people love him.
Yeah, I want to talk about him as we go. Val Geisler, he's a really great character in the film. I want to talk about Mustangs, though, in the sense that, I mean, 7 months of training that you had to go through to get these horses ready. And this was something you started figuring out on this trip in 2010, I guess, in Colorado. And that is that, you know, you'd heard the stories about Mustangs, that they were flighty or that they could be dangerous or they weren't really worth much on a trail. But you said, like, that they were, you know, when you compared them to the domestic horses that you had used, at least on that particular trip, they were just hands down better. I mean, they were. So what's the difference? What's the difference that you were seeing between the horses that you were kind of familiar with and the ones that you weren't, these wild ones?
Well, I think it's worth noting that all horses are individuals, and any breed has good ones and bad ones, and ones that are well conformed and poorly conformed. But what I noticed about the Mustangs that we adopted and used on the 2010 trip is they didn't get they didn't lose weight as much, and that could be because whenever they were growing up, they were accustomed to eating a more variety of food. Maybe they have a better metabolism or whatever reason, but they just seem to keep their muscles and to keep their fat better than the ranch horses or the quarter horses that we used. And they also have really, really phenomenal feet. And I think that could be because, you know, they've had generations of natural selection to where if you have bad feet, you are really selected against. So over time, they just became these really tough horses that, because, you know, some of these Mustang herds, they've been released for 300-400 years onto the American West, and they've had just all sorts of natural selection as to mold them into the animals that they are today. Whereas, you know, a domesticated horse have had you know, artificial selection, which is often towards, you know, one particular attribute, whether it's speed or the ability to turn really fast, and not always toughness. Mm-hmm. And these Mustangs, they're super tough, and they're kind of a reflection of the landscape that molded them. I will say, though, real quick, that it is worth noting that a lot of them are very small.
Right.
Whenever we went to these facilities to pick them out, you know, for the Unbranded horses, we looked through about 300 horses to find the ones that we liked. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of them are smaller. They're, you know, between 13 and 14 hands and, you know, 700 pounds or so, which is a fairly small horse. So it is worth noting that they do tend to run a little bit smaller than your domestic breeds.
What's it like to train them? And the question came to me is because this is part of that initial period before you actually take the trip, you know, because you had help getting them trained, you had to train them yourselves. You know, can you ever really get that wild part out of them, even through the training process?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we were taking our Mustangs onto stages and walking them up and down theaters. I mean, they're complete puppy dogs. Some of them are.
Yeah.
I mean, we had one walk into the house and join us for dinner the other day. Like, literally, the door was open and it just walked in. So they just like any horse, they become, you know, conditioned to humans. Mm-hmm. And once again, you know, they're all individuals. Whenever we started training the horses that we adopted, we were really comfortable around some of them within the first few days. You know, we were riding them around, we were putting saddles on them, we were working with them. And let me back up here. Whenever we went and adopted our horses, we had two professionals that helped us train for the first 30 days. And I think that was really helpful because the first 30 days of training on a horse are the most crucial because they're taught, you know, the foundation of their learning. So having that professional help was really nice. We did work with them quite a bit, especially the first week or so. And, you know, they all progressed at different speeds. Some of the horses, you know, they learned really quick that we were not the enemy, that we were okay to trust and to walk up to and to do things with. And, you know, they got over that fear factor fairly soon. Others didn't. You know, my best horse that I adopted from the trip, we almost cut him because after 45 days, he was so intimidated and scared by us that we thought, wow, he's never going to get over this. And then...
Wait, which one was this? Was this Violet?
This was Violet, the bay that ended up getting injured in Arizona. And one day it just clicked, and he just, after from that point on, rather than looking at us like we were a mountain lion trying to eat his head, he just looked at us like another part of the herd. And, you know, once you kind of get to that point where they realize that you're not there to hurt them, you know, from then on, it's really like working with any other horse, or at least, you know, I've worked with other horses, and that's kind of been my experience.
Let me play a clip from the film. There's a moment with Ben Thamer is one of your friends. He went on the trip with you, and we'll also hear you in this clip. But he talks about, and I'll ask you a little bit about this after we play this moment, the idea of how you relate to your horse, your connection with it. And he's talking here in this moment is pretty funny. Ben's a really funny guy. And he talks about how sometimes the horse reflects the bad part of his personality, and sometimes his horses reflect the good part of his personality. And we'll hear, as I said, a little bit of you in this clip too. Here's a moment from the film Unbranded.
Something I've learned about myself on the trail is I've known this for a long time, but I'm either really in a good mood and want to have fun and whatever, or I'm just a grouchy, negative bastard. Out of here with that. And my horses, Gil and Simmy, kind of, you know, the horse is the mirror to your soul, if you will. Gil is very much like happy-go-lucky Ben.
Probably better stop that guy.
He is kind of the trip dog. I let him run loose most of the time if I'm not riding him. And then Simmy is business Ben. Like, he's grouchy, doesn't put up with much. This guy, he's not a morning horse. He's lazy. He complains a lot in the morning. That's definitely me. So
Violet was the horse that at the beginning of this trip I thought wouldn't make it. He was skinny. He wasn't obeying very well. And since we've begun, he has muscled up. He's gained probably 100 pounds. He's still stepping out strong, and he's the perfect trail horse. And that is fastly becoming my favorite horse.
There's a lot of drama in this story. Violet gets hurt, and which causes a lot of complications. We'll talk a little bit about that. I don't want to give too much away, though, Ben. But would you talk a little bit more about the horses that were Gray was one of yours, Dinosaur and Luke, I guess. Just say a little bit more about their personalities, how they all sort of played off each other, or how you describe your relationship with that group of horses, yours.
Sure. You know, they became part of the team, really. We were around them 24/7, and all horses have the things they're good at, and all of them have their quirks, and they've got their personalities just kind of like people do, too. Gray Horse was the one that was probably my most athletic horse, who was, you know, really, really good looking. And he also liked to kick everybody, which is like the worst trait you can have. He just thought it was so funny. Really annoying habit. And then, you know, Luke, he was kind of my blonde supermodel, a big Palomino paint, just really, really classic, beautiful horse. And he was the cameraman's horse. His deal is he would just follow along with the rest of the herd. So we would put the cameraman on him, and he was totally chill, just walk everywhere and follow everybody around. And that way they could, you know, run their cameras and do their thing. he actually has a sound man, an audio credit in the movie, because we put the audio receiver inside of a saddlebag on Luke. So whenever the cameraman wanted to go out and film a shot in particular, they would just hop off Luke, and then Luke would follow the other horses, and we were all mic'd up. So the cameraman could get audio even if he was, you know, a half mile away, which was good in some points, but also we had something ridiculous like 400 hours of audio to sort through. Okay. But they were able to get a lot of sound bites that were very, you know, definitely not set up.
Let's talk about the kind of human dynamic that really, I think, makes this film so interesting, too. Your relationships with the rest of the guys. Johnny Fitzsimmons is one that we have to talk about, because your relationship is really complicated in the film. And speaking of Violet, the horse, so Johnny warns you not to leave a halter on him, but you didn't listen, and you did, and Violet gets hurt. And this is sort of the beginning of the tension between you two, because it kind of goes back and forth. Would you talk a little bit about that relationship and how that starts to play out? We'll talk a little bit more later on the show, but just talk about that dynamic, because it's complicated, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Sure. Well, you know, whenever you live with somebody in the woods for 5 months, there's obviously going to be disagreements, and, you know, the disagreements sometimes turn into fights, and you end up holding grudges because you don't have that many other people to talk to. You know, there was a lot of times where, you know, we would disagree on a route or on, you know, a proper way of doing things. And in this particular case, I had haltered Violet by, or excuse me, I had picketed him by the halter, which means that he wears the halter all night. And Johnny said, you know, that's not the safest way to do that. But it was the way that I've always done it in the past and had never had any problems, and disregarded his advice. And what ended up happening is the horse reached forward to scratch his face. And whenever he did that, the hind part of the shoe got caught inside of the halter and got his foot stuck up by the halter. And anyways, he kicked and scratched and eventually broke through the halter. But in the process, he injured his hind left leg, which was really fortunate, because if the halter hadn't have broken, he could have injured it even further, or possibly even killed himself. So yeah, there was definitely times where we should have listened to each other. And I will say, though, that sometimes movies make things a little bit more dramatic than they were in real life. And in the case of our personal relationships in the movie, you know, 99% of the times it was just cracking jokes and having a good time. But there, indeed, there were definitely times whenever tensions were high and whenever one of us did things that pissed each other off. But, you know, that's what happens whenever you live with people in the woods for 5 months.
Let's talk a little bit about Val Geisler.
Except for Val. You Except can't get mad at Val.
Yeah, right. Talk a little bit about him. He's sort of, it's interesting because he becomes this this father figure, but also you guys become kind of son figures for him. Talk a little bit about Val. He's a great character.
I met Val in 2010 during the first ride, and I met him at a place called Hawk's Rest, which is on the Yellowstone River in the Teton Wilderness, kind of by the at the headwaters of the Yellowstone. And he was a volunteer for the Forest Service cabin. He spends 2 to 3 months every summer at Hawk's Rest, which is only accessible by foot or by horse. It's deep in the wilderness. So I met him in this really magical place, and he, you know, invited me to come over for coffee, and then it turned into this singing songs with the guitar, and we just ended up becoming really good buds in the backcountry. And whenever the Unbranded ride, you know, came into existence, or the concept of it did, I called Val and had a lot of questions for him, because he's 70 years old. He's been training horses his entire life. He's been packing horses for his entire life, and he's just a wealth of knowledge. And through calling him with questions, finally he just said, "Boy, I'm just going to drive down to Texas and help you guys out." So sure enough, he loads up his trailer and drives to Texas and helped us train all the Mustangs, and then helped us all the way through Arizona and was our road crew through the deserts, and just devoted, you know, 4 months of his life and a ton of money and a ton of time and to help making this trip possible. And, you know, never asked for anything and just wanted to come and help us out. And, in a way, I think see his love for backcountry horsemanship continue. And, you know, what we didn't realize is how close we would become to him, you know, during the trip. We ended up relying on him and his knowledge, you know, for months. And we were incredibly fortunate to have his involvement, you know, in the trip and in the film.
Yeah. Let me play a moment when he's saying goodbye to you. This was that leg of the trip after in Arizona. He's headed back up to Wyoming. He'll see you again, but he's saying goodbye after all of this time. And it's kind of touching. He gets kind of emotional about it because he's clearly established a relationship with you. Here's another moment from Unbranded.
"It's been great being with my boys for this period of time, and I need to get back up into Wyoming. Cindy and I take care of a Forest Service cabin in the mountains. I look forward to see them in a couple of months when they ride through. You guys do great. You got off to a great start. You've done a great job. And I can't tell you what it's meant to me and that. And
okay, so I love
thanks
you
so much for everything. I love you too.
You're good.
The man. We'll see you.
Well,
see you on the other side.
Love you.
Love you too. Here I go getting soft again.
Bye.
Okay.
We'll be in touch, Bill.
Oh, yeah, we'll bunch. We'll be in touch.
See you later.
You drive safe, all right?"
That's great. Yeah, I think everyone will fall in love with this guy. He's terrific. And I guess we should mention he had a son who was really young who died. And I think he makes this connection between you guys and what his son might have been, I guess.
Yeah. That was we didn't realize that. We never knew he had a son that was kicked and killed by a horse until later on with of the journey, and he kind of told us that towards the end of it, and you know, it's pretty powerful what he said in the movie about us.
Ben Masters is with us. He's one of the subjects in the documentary film Unbranded. He was really the mastermind behind the ride and the film. He's written a book about the journey. Next Wednesday evening, we're screening the film at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Ben's going to be with us for a Q&A after the film, so yeah, you should join us. Admission is free, but seating is limited. You can get details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take another quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the documentary film Unbranded, which we're screening next Wednesday night. We have details about that a little bit later in the program. It's about Ben Masters and his three friends who adopt some horses from the BLM and make a ride, a really long ride from border to border, Arizona, the border of Mexico to Canada. He's created a film. Ben Masters has even written a book about it as well. We're talking with Ben Masters. He'll be joining us next Wednesday. I wanted to ask you about the day-to-day. That is one thing that comes through, is just how boring it can be or difficult it can be. What's it like? The personal hygiene. I think it's kind of fun to see you guys really clean-cut and clean-shaven in the beginning days and just getting ragged and ragged and ragged. What's the day-to-day like on something like that?
You wake up sore, cold, hungry, wondering if your horses ran away in the night, and you get up and then you go look for them and bring them back to camp. We let our horses graze at nighttime because they, doing a 5-month journey, they need to eat as much as they can and rest as much as they can and try to keep their fitness. And then we would cook coffee and eat Snickers bars and Clif bars. And then we would load up the horses, which usually takes about 2 hours. And then we would travel for about 8 or 9 hours a day, wow, which was anywhere between 15 and 25 miles, depending on the terrain. We'd usually stop for lunch for a little bit, 30, 45 minutes maybe. And then at nighttime, we would get to our evening campsite, which we had, looked at on the GPS and tried to find a good spot that had water and a meadow and grass for the horses. And we would try to get there before dark, and then we would untack everything, take care of the horses, check them to make sure they didn't have any saddle sores or anything like that. And then cook dinner. We only really ate dinner. We just ate Clif bars and granola bars all day. And then at dinner we would, sit down and have a meal of some kind, which by that point in time of the day usually tasted really, really good.
I'm interested in, you went through a lot of Western states to get up to Canada. I wanted to ask you about your experience in Utah. Had you ever been to Utah? Had you ever ridden in Utah before?
I've never ridden in Utah. I have driven through Utah. I was there for about 2 weeks in, probably 2010 or 2011 in the Four Corners area. And then, I skied in Park City once, but that was my experience in Utah was very limited prior to this trip.
What were the challenges of riding? I mean, it probably wasn't unlike some of the other places, but one of the big challenges that you talk about in the film is water in the Southwest. That was one of the challenges you dealt with, I guess, in Utah.
Utah was actually a really difficult state to go through. Arizona has the Arizona Trail, which takes out all the logistical difficulties for you. Utah doesn't have an established south to north trail like Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona. It just doesn't exist. So it was actually a very difficult state to get through. Way southern Utah, the Grand Staircase, the Escalante, water was pretty far and few between, and that we also didn't have any road support. Val left us in Arizona because we thought we were ready. And I think, it was like 2 days after Val left us, we lost all of our horses for like 20 miles in a full day, which was terrifying. And then like 3 days after that, we lost them again. And one of them went 40 miles, just ran away from us. So, you know, we were thinking, what the heck are we doing? Like, why do the horses keep trying to run away from us? And then we actually hit snow really, really. We encountered a lot of snowpack in Utah and had to turn around a few times, mainly on the Wasatch Plateau. But that was okay because that forced us down into the San Pete Valley, where we learned they have the best turkey on the face of the planet. Which, by the way, Gary Olson, if you're there, we love you guys. And you know, one of the things that we did get out of Utah that we didn't get out of other states is we were forced to go mainly because of snow and through a lot of communities. Yeah. You know, we had to go up the San Pete Valley on the highway and got to interact with a lot of the locals, and we got a lot of love and a tremendous amount of help from different ranchers and farmers and places that we were able to stay and met a really wide variety of people. And then, you know, once we got into the Salt Lake area, it was incredibly difficult to go through because the watershed is protected. So we had to stay on the east side of the divide and not get into the Salt Lake watershed because horses aren't allowed. And all the good trails were on the side where horses weren't allowed. Mm-hmm. So it became a real logistical nightmare. So Utah was probably the most logistically challenging state.
Yeah.
And it was also the state where we didn't have any injuries, so it didn't really make sense. But it was a tough one. It was a tough one. Utah was beautiful, though. I love the aspen forest.
Yeah. You've written about riding the Wasatch Range of Utah on this trip, and as you put it in your book, watching the lines of cars below you. And you say you reminisced about the first class you took at Texas A&M and a professor, and kind of an insight that you learned at this moment about conservation, about the definition of conservation. I wondered if you'd say something about that.
It was probably the most impactful class that I've ever taken, and it was the last class that professor ever taught, and he just left the books behind and just kind of poured his soul and what he'd learned over the past 50 years of conservation into these lectures. And you know what his final lecture was, you know, what is conservation? Is it you know, drawing lines around an area and saying that nobody can go there and you can't, you know, do timber or mine or whatever, or, you know, how do you define conservation? And, you know, what his definition was is the wise use of natural resources, which I think is something that, you know, it encompasses a lot, you know, because everybody uses resources and you're kidding yourself if you don't. It's just, how do we extract them wisely to where we can also make a living for the other animals and plants that rely on the planet too. And I wasn't expecting you to bring that up in this interview, but it was that's what I dedicated the book to, was the wise use of conservation. And
yeah, I want to add one thing we haven't talked about, and because it's a big part of the film, obviously. And it's sort of at the heart of the film, this ongoing dispute about these wild horses on public land. And you have, what you explore in the film, on one side you have these advocates who say horses, you know, these wild horses should be free to roam the public land of the West. And there's this case that some make that they're being eradicated by the management practices of the BLM. On the other side, you have ranchers in the West who say the BLM is not, you know, managing the species properly. You have these horses that are continuing to multiply, and they're causing a lot of damage to the rangeland. It's competing with livestock. So it's a really complicated issue. I'm wondering if you've sort of staked a position on all of that, because in some ways it seems like there's kind of a middle ground that you've come to because you do talk about both sides, I suppose. I guess it's more complicated than saying there are two sides. But what's the position you stake, do you think, now that you've had this ride and that you've thought about the issue?
Man, that is a tough question. I think it's important to recognize some things whenever you start talking about this. You know, one of the things that the ranchers and the large animal livestock industry has a hard time understanding, or the hunting industry, is you know, you can't kill these horses. You can't send them to slaughter. You can't euthanize them just because they haven't done it in years. And whenever they have done that, there's been, you know, extreme public backlash. So, you know, if you take that option off the table, whether you want that option or not, it's mm-hmm. not the option. Then you're forced to start thinking, okay, well, how are we going to control these, you know, the population growth of these horses? And for the past, you know, 20 years or so, the BLM has rounded them up with helicopter whenever they've gone over the appropriate management level, which is what the BLM's level is, where they think that the horses and livestock and wildlife and everything else that depends on the landscape, what they think that number is. Whenever they exceed that number, the BLM goes and gathers them with helicopters.
Yeah.
And then they put them in pens and offer them up for adoption. But the problem is that the adoption demand doesn't equal the number that they have to gather off the range to get it down to the appropriate management level.
Right.
So what's resulted is they've just been stockpiling horses to where right now there's almost 50,000 wild horses and burros as well in these short-term pens and in these long-term pastures. And it's created a financial mess. You know, it's not fair for the animal. And it's super tough. You know, it'd be wonderful if they could all just self-regulate and we wouldn't have this overpopulation problem. And maybe part of the solution is to open up more land where there's non-reproducing herds or something like that. You know, the end statement on the wild horse, you know, talking point, I guess, in the movie is a guy named Dr. Bob Garrett,
right,
out of Montana State University. And he says that if we aggressively used birth control methods on the range to where we slowed the population growth to where whenever they did have to gather horses, the amount gathered would equal the adoption demand, then you would have a perfectly sustainable solution. And that I think is a situation that would be acceptable to all interest groups. The problem is, how are you going to get it funded?
Yeah.
And how are you going to get the horse levels down to that, to a number small enough to where that's feasible? And you know, it's super controversial. To be honest, if I had cracked the code and had the perfect solution, we would have presented it into the film. And, you know, I wish we did come up with the perfect solution, and then we would have presented it. But the reality is there's not an easy answer. You know, what we don't want to have happen is for, you know, it get to the point where there's so many horses where they have to euthanize large amounts. And then we also don't want to get to the point where the horse population grows to such an extent where we have a really bad drought or a really bad winter, and there is a die-off of horses and also everything else on that rangeland that that relies on the forage that range provides. So, you know, it is. It's a super tough issue, and I wish I had an answer for you. I really do.
How do you figure, Ben Masters, that you changed over that course of time? One of the things you've written about is you point out that horses travel at 2.5 miles per hour, which is a pretty slow pace, but it gives you a chance to see things in a different way, I guess. That must have been one of the things you learned. I wonder if that did slow down the pace in which you live now.
No, right now, releasing a movie, there is no 2.5 miles an hour.
Right.
You know, I think everybody should you know, maybe not do a 5-month horseback trip, but get just away, you know, out of cell phone service and the ability to just hang out with your friends for days on end and not focus on being busy and a lot of small things. And, you know, I really enjoyed that time and the camaraderie. I really enjoyed that slowness of the routine. And I also enjoyed, you know, making decisions that had a real impact. You know, do we go left or do we go right? If we go right, we're going to have snow problems. If we go left, we're going to be on a highway. And, you know, making decisions that impacted a lot of animals and the crew and potentially the success of that day. You know, what I learned about myself, I think it's pretty rare for somebody to watch footage of themselves, you know, hours and hours of it. And to get to see who you are as other people see who you are. And, you know, I learned a lot about myself, you know, being able to see myself as others do. And there's things that I like about myself and there's things that need improvement. So it was a really rare opportunity and one that I'm very fortunate to have had.
Ben Masters, he masterminded the Unbranded ride in the film. He's also, there's a book about it, also called Unbranded. We have details about all of that on our website. He made this trip, of course, with his friends Ben Thamer, Thomas Glover, and Johnny Fitzsimmons, and you can see the film next Wednesday night. We're screening it as part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Ben will be there for a Q&A after the film. Again, seating is limited, so plan on arriving early to get a seat. You can get details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Ben Masters joined us from a studio in Houston. Ben, thanks very much for being with us. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.